The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life, a life savings company for your journey to and through retirement.
Let's go to our newspaper panel who have joined me in the studio this morning. Gary Gannon is the Social Democrats Dublin Central TD and spokesperson for Justice, Home Affairs and Migration. Larry Donnelly is, of course, a law lecturer at NUIG Galway. And Tanya Ward is CEO of the Children's Rights Alliance. You're all very welcome to the programme. Thank you for coming in early and reading all of the coverage in the papers today. And there is a lot of coverage on this presidential election. To come to you first, Larry, I was very excited last week when Mary Lou spoke down at the Ploughing Championship about this game changer, this individual who was going to be match fit or up for the match or ready for the match. I think she thought she was at Croker, maybe not in the Ploughing Championship. Did the announcement yesterday that they're now going to back Catherine Connolly, did it live up to its promise?
Looked at in and of itself, absolutely not. I think it might go up there as one of the biggest oversells in the history of Irish politics. When she said game changer, Irish language, sporting analogies, etc. I mean, Jarlath Burns went down to 5-1. An awful lot of people, myself included, thought it might be him. Then he ruled himself out. Then the rumor mill really started churning and all sorts of names went out there. Just about every name in the country went out there. And then when it came time and it was revealed to be Catherine Connolly, everyone was kind of like, okay. Now, of course, and I'm sure Gary's going to point this out, it is significant in the sense that the left appear to be united. But I would say from Catherine Connolly's point of view that I believe that she might be the candidate favored by the left of Sinn Féin. For instance, I heard Lynn Boylan on the radio with Claire Byrne the other day strongly signaling that she would like Catherine Connolly to be the candidate. I don't think she will be the candidate of those who are in Sinn Féin, primarily on the national question, and who are to the right of her on most other things, especially immigration.
She's too far left for some of them. So you don't think she will bring in all of that Sinn Féin vote?
Oh, I absolutely don't. And I think in terms of Catherine Connolly as a presidential candidate, look, we know that there is discontent within the Labour Party over the party's support for her. We also know that there are vulnerabilities there. I mean, the three names we're going to hear over and over again in the coming weeks, Gemma O'Doherty, Mick Wallace and Claire Daly. We're going to hear those three names and her association with those figures in the past over and over again. And I think she's taken...
You don't think she's dealt with those now and drawn a line under those? Are you not satisfied with the answers you've been given?
Well, the fact remains. I mean, Claire, she's associated with them all. And I think that if you look, for instance, Catherine Connolly is going to need transfers from, for instance, South County Dublin, affluent people there. If you look at some of the coverage, for instance, there were pieces by Justine McCarthy and Alison O'Connor about Catherine Connolly. I think they will prove deeply damaging to her campaign. So look, Connolly, this is the best thing that's happened so far for the Connolly campaign. But for me, the jury is definitely still out.
Gary, jury is out.
Yeah, well, I think that's okay, isn't it? I think every candidate's going to go in and is going to answer difficult questions. But Catherine Connolly, for me, is the candidate that stands out. I think she'd be an amazing president. I thought that 6 months ago, a year ago.
Are you disappointed that Sinn Féin didn't think that 6 months ago or even a couple of months ago, that they left it so late to back her?
I'm fairly indifferent to what Sinn Féin, I think. And to be honest, I am happy that they're part of this United Left bloc now. I think it does give weight to Catherine's campaign. Sinn Féin do have formidable organising capacity across the country. That's joined alongside ourselves now, Labour, People Before Profit. I mean, that's a fairly significant coalition of people who will be out there mobilising. I've been involved in Catherine's campaign quite a bit for the last couple of months. Certainly in the last week, you're seeing people all over the country having branches organising around coalitions of people from the left getting out, knocking at doors. The other candidates don't have that yet. I mean, I appreciate that the Jim Gavin, Hedda Humphreys are out there, they're at the Ploughing. But what we're doing is ploughing doors, like getting around there, mobilising all of the constituencies.
Are you going to be out on the doors with fellow Sinn Féin supporters, fellow Sinn Féin TDs or councillors?
Absolutely.
Campaigning?
Much the same I was with Marie Sherlock when we had Catherine Connolly down in a couple of youth clubs in the inner city a few weeks ago. Absolutely, I'll be up.
Well, she's a Labour, so that's probably more aligned to the Sock Dems. You're happy enough to be out with Sinn Féin, are you?
I'd like to get along with people in politics. I'd be more than happy to get out and knock at doors on anybody. If you want to come out on Wednesday and hang some posters, because I was a bit nervous about that. So that would be, the Shinners would be very welcome to that.
What about the point that Larry makes there, that he's not convinced that the Sinn Féin voters en masse will come in behind somebody like Catherine Connolly, that she is too far left for them, and that there are still too many uncomfortable questions around her association with Mick Wallace, with Claire Dilley, and of course that visit to Syria.
Yeah, but I think Catherine's answered the questions in relation to Syria. I think she's answered it almost every interview she's done yet now.
Satisfactorily, some
people
say.
People are going to come to their own conclusions in relation to whether it's satisfactory or not. For me, it's definitely been done satisfactory. She went, in terms of Mick Wallace, Claire Dilley, she has said she respected the work that he done when you were in Dáil Éireann. I can respect that. That's fine. She launched Claire Daly's campaign in my constituency. I don't hold any grudges against that. I'm an adult. We can get over that. It's
but
fine.
It's not about grudges, is it? It's about the judgment of a person.
It's actually just about admiration. So when I actually stand back and look at Catherine Connolly, I think she's a better candidate than the ones that are on the paper. And I think she'd be a great president. That for me is what it comes down to. Who's the calibre of this person? Would they represent the country well? I think she does. I can think she has a lot about her that's presidential.
Tanya, there is some coverage in the papers today about some disquiet within Sinn Féin that for a party that has such ambitions that they weren't able to find somebody from either within their own ranks or attract somebody from outside of the party structures to run from them. But I suppose this does minimise the risk for Mary Lou McDonald, who hasn't been that successful electorally in this country. Do you think they're trying to insulate themselves a bit with this choice?
Yeah, they had a very difficult choice because they either had to run Mary Lou, right? So that was possibly the game changer candidate. And I think Mary Lou was probably having a bit of fun with the media, you know, with her announcement. I think
don't play with us, Mary Lou.
You'll punish her. But she was having a bit of fun with you, I think, with that strategy. Yeah. But it fell back on they didn't have a good choice there, because if they ran Mary Lou and she would have been formidable in the campaign, they would have lost her from domestic politics. And I think that was a choice that they weren't willing to make. And maybe she didn't have the stomach to do the presidential campaign, because it is different. It's a harder one to do. And you'd want to be sure you're going to finish in politics if you don't win. I think what's interesting about this particular choice that they've gone for, and it's interesting that Rose Walsh talked about, you know, we need to unite a bit like marriage equality. So this is a real test now for the left-wing for the parties more on the left, right? But I thought that as well. I thought, so they're going to have to do what they did for marriage equality and repeal, because what's interesting under the hood, what happens in that referendum campaign is the comms officers for all the political parties there all came together, including Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, actually. And they all worked together, and they also built their canvassing teams around the country. Mm-hmm. So they have to recreate that, and they have to put their money in behind that. That doesn't normally happen in referendum campaigns. So there's a bit of a blueprint there, and there's a real test there whether the left can do it. Because one of the issues they have, I suppose you have, right, mm-hmm. is that Catherine doesn't have a second left wing candidate that where she can get transfers for, so she has to get a really big first preference vote early on to get any of the transfers that might come from Heather Humphreys or Jim Gavin. And that's going to be the real test, I think, for parties like the Sock Dems and Sinn Féin and Labour.
Do you think they see this Sinn Féin as a trial run for the next general election? It's a big test for that united left vote.
Well, that's what they're selling it as, right? They're selling it as this is the first chance, because they had to make a calculation that this is, because if we do run, potentially we're going to lose against Catherine Connolly. Potentially we'll damage Catherine Connolly as well in the election. So all of that was probably part of the calculation. But I do think it is a trial run. We will get to see whether the parties can work together. And I think what's going to happen is they probably will. Probably will work together to pull the campaign off. I could see that happening, because there's a lot of skin in the game. But I suppose the other strategy they're intending to run is they're trying to make it a referendum on Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
Referendum on the coalition.
Yeah, that's what they're trying to do, yeah.
I mean, one of the pieces in the papers today, I think it's, again, Mary Regan's piece in the Sunday Independent, and she's saying, Larry, that really where the relief is today will be in the Fianna Fáil camp, that they didn't pull out a trick card within Sinn Féin, that they didn't run somebody who would have challenged Jim Gavin's vote, particularly here in the capital.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think Fianna Fáil will be breathing a sigh of relief on that front. I think Tanya's made a lot of important points there. The fact is that Catherine Connolly, for the reasons I listed already, I think is going to need a very, very big first preference vote to have a chance in this thing. And the one thing I think Fianna Fáil will be watching, and this is alluded to in other pieces in the paper, is that if Maria Steen qualifies for the ballot, I think Fianna Fáil has a lot to lose there, because I could see the more conservative rump of Fianna Fáil, a lot of first preference votes drifting her way on the abortion issue and on other things. And if that happens, then they will be almost certainly well decently behind Heather Humphreys in terms of first preference votes. Yeah. So that's a spot to watch.
This assumption of Fianna Fáil's vote in the capital, though. I mean, if you look at Dublin City Council, the Social Democrats have more seats in Dublin City Council than
I don't know if it's Fianna Fáil's vote in the capital. They're talking about Jim Gavin's.
So Jim Gavin's vote.
Particularly in the capital because of the success, obviously, he brought to Dublin GAA.
That's great, but we also have like lots of people that support other supports and probably think great success in the GAA, but probably it's not somebody we'd look for as the president. I mean, votes in the capital, we have a bigger vote than Fianna Fáil do. Labour added on to that, so I'm not taking that into... I think that's probably overestimated a little bit. He certainly hasn't been tested in the capital in any sort of real way. The rest of us have.
Okay, where is, Tanya, the campaign for Maria Steen to get on the ballot paper at this point? I'm looking here at the Irish Mail on Sunday. Their headline is, after Sinn Féin's damp squib, there you go again, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael fear Maria Steen would be the real game changer. So where is that at?
So what you're getting from the coverage is that the Fine Gael certainly is predicting that she's going to get on the ticket and that she's going to get her 20 nominations from the Oireachtas. And you can kind of see that kind of starting to emerge now, I think. And that is probably a game changer in the campaign, because she's, you know, an excellent debater, right? She's demonstrated that. And she will do what I think, Larry, you just mentioned there. I was thinking of my late dad, you know, if she'd been on the ticket and he had a chance to vote, he probably would have voted for her over Jim Gavin for that reason, because he was very Catholic, very pro-life. So she is a kind of a game changer candidate from that perspective.
We think she has 12 nominees within the Oireachtas at the minute. Independent Ireland, she's meeting Michael Collins tomorrow. There could be four there if Michael decides to go until she gets before the 16.
They all want to be the queen maker. You know, that's what they all want. They want to be the one. I gave the final vote, and that I got her on the ticket, and she won the campaign. There's a kind of an underlying thing, though, I think, with the nomination process. And I see, you know, some coverage, particularly around Sheridan, how unfair it is, how difficult it is getting the ticket. But one thing that I was kind of thinking about, you kind of need a political party behind you, or you need money, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the other side. You can't just be a great person and run for president. You either have to have the foot soldiers, you have to have money to spend on the campaign, or, you know, you're not going to get very far. And I think Maria Steen probably has money behind her as well, in the same way that Sheridan does.
Gareth Sheridan has penned this piece in the Sunday Independent today, Larry. He says there's unhealthy interference with the councils there, that Fine Gael has given that diktat to its councillors, support our person, and that Fianna Fáil hasn't done it explicitly, but implicitly and quite subtly, they are mandating their Fianna Fáil councillors to support their candidate. Do you think that does undermine the council's constitutional mandate to put somebody forward? And do you think the campaign, the electorate, needs more choice at this point than what's currently, you know, confirmed for the ballot?
Well, anyone who knows me knows I'm not a fan of the party whip system. So I do believe that choice is better. I am opposed to dictates being imposed on councillors who have precious little power anyway on dictates being imposed upon them from on high. And I salute, for instance, the Tipperary county councillor who went and gave Gareth Sheridan a vote despite the wishes of the bosses within Fine Gael. That having been said, of course I understand that political parties have their own candidates and are going to do everything in their power to make sure that their own candidates win. But I think all in all, do I think choice is good? Yes. And I think in terms of Gareth Sheridan, he provides a new, fresh outside perspective. And in terms of Maria Steen, the point has been made, and I think it's a good one, is that on terms of the cultural issues, you know, there is a third of the electorate who are not being spoken for in terms of their choices. So on that basis, I would hope that both of them make the ballot.
Gary?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think choice is always good. In terms of Gareth Sheridan, I read his piece this morning and he's suggesting that there's some sort of interference or diktats being sent down. He didn't give any evidence as to how he came to that conclusion.
Well, he says here that when he was leaving a Carlow County Council meeting last week, where obviously he didn't get their support and was very disappointed at that fact, that he could hear sort of whoops coming from the Fianna Fáil councillors, Fianna Fáil councillors, saying, you know, that'll stop him in his tracks, that'll put a stop to his Gallup, and he felt that they were actually being instructed from on high to not back him.
Yeah, so I can't speak to the whoops on Carlow County Council.
I mean, there might have been some whoopings that the whole process was done and dusted.
I think that's probably because I heard the whoops on Dublin City Council from some of my own guys there after that process. Look, parties are going to want to support their own candidates. I don't think there's anything more nefarious going on than simply saying, look, thanks a million for coming in. We've heard you out, but actually we have our own guy, which is actually how this normally happens, the idea that there's something more insidious going on. I mean, absolutely, it'll capture some pages and you'll get into the paper, but I'm not sure it's a fair reflection of the facts. Look, we have our own, obviously we have Social Democrats councillors all over the country. We didn't need to send out any diktats about not actually...
You didn't do it subtly. You didn't just sort of send out a text message.
No nods
watching
and winks.
From high.
There was no nods and winks. There was no subtle. It was just a case of actually people, we assumed people would just support the fact that we're supporting Catherine Connolly.
So what do you think is going to happen here now? Do you think come Wednesday, both Gareth Sheridan and Maria Steen will have the support?
I think Maria Steen has a better chance than Gareth Sheridan.
I would agree. I think Sheridan, one of the reasons I think he wrote that piece, I think he's bitter because I think he probably knew he needed Carlo to come on side. That said, he still has an outside chance.
Yeah, he still has Meath, Offaly and Louth tomorrow. There are other councils, but that's where he's focusing. I think it would be fair to say that the budget, Larry, has been somewhat overshadowed by the presidency. That's where all of the focus is at the moment. Perhaps that'll change because there's just 2 weeks to go. But perhaps that's going to be a positive for this government.
Yeah, I'd say the government must be delighted with the distraction because the nature of this budget seems like the sort of, I won't say, well, I will say kind of giveaway, but, you know, good budgets, I suppose, from our point of view, those are over very clearly. And it seems like there's going to be some rollback of the things because, and I think it's appropriate because of all the storm clouds that we know are on the horizon with the global economy, with the tariffs, with everything else that's out there. So I think prudence is entirely appropriate, but politically,
prudence ain't popular.
Politically, that doesn't work. And one of the flashpoints that's identified, I think, in the Mail and in the Business Post is the idea of social welfare increases. And there seems to be tension within Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil in terms of increases to social welfare. Fianna Fáil wants an increase, I think, 12 euro across the board for social welfare payments, whereas Fine Gael says no, only for the old age pensions. We'll see how that resolves itself.
I sort of feel, to be honest with you, that I read that every year. I certainly remember reading something pretty similar last year. Oh, Fine Gael, given the fact that we're at full employment, don't want to see those job seeker payments go up at the same level as all the other payments. Bit of pushback. Guess what? On the day they all go up.
Yeah, I think that's part of, that, you know, inevitable tension is the two parties still trying to just, you know, have a little bit of clear blue water between them and what they stand for in terms of Fianna Fáil maybe slightly left economically, Fine Gael slightly more right, slightly more cautious, more prudent. I suppose that's a part of it too. But the big message here is that I think prudence is entirely appropriate, even if the government parties don't get a lot of thanks for it.
And there also appears to be big pushback again within the papers against that cut to 9% in the VAT rate, Gary, for hospitality. Coverage, I think, on the front of the Sunday Times today. Food fight, fears over the VAT cut backlash, that the ministers are concerned about giving that cut in VAT to some of the big players in the game. We all know the names of some of those fast food restaurants that are doing quite well. You just have to look at their profits, and the idea that they would take advantage and that they would benefit from this is kind of uncomfortable. But it is something the Soc Dems have supported.
Yeah, we did support it. So this campaign that was being pushed when support and will continue support for these particular industries. Your local coffee shops, people you see around town who are struggling to pay. I mean, for me was where this campaign was supposed to be targeted, aimed. It was never supposed to be for the big hoteliers, the big restaurants. The government have said,
but you can't. We hear this time and time again, from the revenue commissioner.
You can't
bring in these divisions. It's too complicated, and it's. So, you don't buy that?
No, I don't buy that. So in the absence of being able to do this division, you're talking about a tax cut that costs over a billion and a half, maybe, in the absence of doing this. And we have just aimed at those retailers. It's about 500 million. So the idea that we can't do something that actually costs so much, why can't we not? Surely in this day and age, there is mechanisms, there's formulas, there's anything that we can do in terms of income receipts that can actually be able to separate this.
So who do you think should get it?
I think the small retailers should get it. I think small coffee shops, hairdressers, the ones that are on your towns, in your villages, the ones that are closing down, they should get it. Large hoteliers, large restaurants, the ones we know, but we won't name them, I don't think for a second they should get it.
Yeah.
But so I don't believe that something can't be done like this.
Yeah. Tanya Ward?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you because actually, and here's the other side of it, revenue is one of the most sophisticated systems we have in operation, and most effective systems in operation.
Really effective.
I think they could make it happen if he wants to target and make it much smarter because it's very expensive. And to just think big multinationals are going to just cream off this and the small retailer, you know, get some help. But I think it needs to be much more targeted.
I mean, there's about 1.5 billion, we're being told, Larry, in this tax package. And if this cut to VAT comes in for hospitality down to 9%, you're talking about 890 million of that, well over half. That gives very, very little space for any of the measures that householders who are struggling want to see in this budget.
Yeah, it's true. And I would agree 100% with Gary and Tanya. I think that this is warranted. I think that if you had talked to any small business person in terms of the costs of doing business, you know, for instance, one of the other things that's coming up is an increase in the minimum wage, which I'm all in favor of. But that does have costs for small business. There's no doubt about that. So I'm entirely in favor of this. You know, even though, as you say, you know, prudence, as I've said, prudence is appropriate. And as you say, this leaves little room for maneuver. But I think if we look at the grand scheme of things and where we have to prioritize, I think this is a worthy initiative.
Do you think they will hold strong on that? Do you think we're not going to see any of those one-off measures that we saw in the last budget and, in fact, in the last previous, I think, four budgets? Do you think they'll be able to hold the line?
I think that there's a reasonable chance that they will, and I say that for a cynical reason. An election is a long way off.
Yeah.
So I think that that's probably one reason why they can.
Well, an election is a long way off, but a presidential election, which potentially could be an election between the opposition and the government parties, is not a long way off.
Will that
influence them?
That's a fair point. And I think Rose Conway Walsh, and I think Gary alluded to it as well, one of the strongest selling points, I think, for Catherine Conley is going to be if they adopt that anti-Fianna Fáil, anti-Fine Gael messaging, I think that will work to their benefit. So, yeah, of course, that's in the offing.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things they'll have to do, and it comes across in the coverage, is make more meaningful investments, because the issue with those universal top-up payments is they actually failed to help those people who were below the poverty line. And actually, we didn't support it in the Children's Rights Alliance, as did many other organisations that work for people on low incomes, because it wasn't targeted enough, not enough money to help you with paying for the everyday essentials. And that's what this budget has to be about. There was a big jump in the child poverty numbers between 2023 and 2024.
One in five now children below the poverty line housing costs are taken into consideration.
And has been a big shock to the political system that those payments didn't actually help. And the other thing we know is, generally, if you invest in services, they have your money just goes much further as a country. And that's what they should be doing with the money. So, you know, like even think more broadly, I think for a lot of people, if they could be guaranteed that when their mum or dad ends up in A&E, that they can get a bed, I think that would be more meaningful to people, or that there's an early years creche in their locality, that they invest in infrastructure, building schools, early year services. Those kind of things are much more meaningful. And I think people will back that if the government could announce that in this budget.
A reduction in VAT for the catering industry is a disgraceful waste of taxpayers' money. Absolutely disgraceful, says one taxpayer. It'll be interesting to see. We're going to be speaking to Jack Chambers, the Minister for Public Expenditure, just after 11 this morning. So I will be trying to get a little more detail out of him about this and see what he thinks about some of the criticisms. Speaking of criticisms, one of the other budget battlegrounds, it appears, Larry, is this question of whether or not they're going to do something for developers to try and spur on building in this country. Tax breaks could be back. It looks like there is a bit of a war raging between James Brown, the Minister for Housing, and Pascal Donoghue, the Minister for Finance, who has said time and time again that he is concerned and generally quite opposed to it. The Sunday Times editorial today certainly ringing alarm bells on that.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's a difficult spot. I mean, we all believe and we all know that there's a need to build, you know, to hugely increase the housing stock. There's no doubt about that. And most of us would almost at this stage say by any means necessary. Now, whether this is the right approach or not, I'm not 100% sure. But certainly the one thing we can all agree on is we need to, you know, build houses. That's the bottom line.
I mean, that's something you have a difficulty with, wouldn't you, Gary Gannon?
I think
Or do you agree with Larry? Look, at this point, actually the public are just desperate to see houses built, and they think everything needs to be on the table as long as it's, you know, going to work.
In the midst of a crisis, I'll be as practical and as open to any ideas, but we've done this before and it hasn't worked. You know, we've had tax breaks for developers previously. It didn't do anything in terms of stimulating houses and also bringing the cost of houses down. So, I mean,
well, I think it probably did do something in terms of stimulating the number of houses that were built.
Well, but the type of houses that were built, the ghost estates, the houses that people couldn't live in, the houses that were built without water infrastructure. I mean, the legacy of that is not something I want to go back to. For me, what can we do to get the house prices down? Affordable housing. Can we zone land affordable within all local authority areas? Have some involvement of the state, not complete or other involvement, the voluntary housing sector, the people that are actually building houses that families can live in, people who are professionals at a certain income threshold. This is what we need. So give me the ideas and tell me how that will actually get more people living in houses that are affordable to them.
Yeah. I just want to move to one other story which has been in the papers for weeks now, and that is the death of Daniel Arabose. And I think the discovery of a body earlier in the week thought to be young Daniel, it really disturbed people, didn't it, Tanya Ward?
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to a member of my team and she said, I saw his picture and I think I'll only ever look at it once because it's a very hard thing to deal with. And I think what's very hard for people is the notion that a child could disappear for nearly 4 years and nobody knew about it. Mm-hmm. I think that just feels like that's not normal in our society. You know, we value childhood in this country. Our communities value childhood. How did this happen? How could a child disappear? But the other side, I'll just say thank God. Thank God for his family. Thank God for all the people that loved him. And for anyone that's working in the sector as well, all the child protection, social workers, community voluntary organisations, this is something that was hanging over them. And the fact that he's been found, I think, will give people some peace. Now the question turns to what happened and mm-hmm. to try and understand, was there some did something go wrong in his early life? Was there some intervention from the state that could have made the difference in terms of the outcome? And, you know, some justice for him, what happened to him? Yeah. And then how did we fail as a society or community to notice that he had disappeared?
One of the big sort of lines in all of the newspapers today, Larry, was the difficulty that there might be in establishing a cause of death here. I'm very conscious that there is a live Garda investigation and we don't want to compromise that in any way.
Yeah, no, we don't know exactly what happened to this poor child, but like everybody else, I look at the picture and I get very emotional just looking at it because, you know, any of us who are parents in particular, you know, we see our own kids' faces and that. And I think really what has to happen, as Tanya says, is an investigation above all to remember him, yeah. But most importantly, to do everything we possibly can to make sure that something like this never happens again.
We're looking at a rapid review now within Tuzla into their interactions with this young boy. We're looking at that well-being check with 42,000 cases that were closed during COVID. And we also have our national review panel, which of course has an independent chair, taking a look back at the life of Daniel Arabose and his interaction with Tuzla. So that's three reviews that are taking place, but you want a statutory review, one that has a statutory footing. Why? What difference would that make, Gary?
I think to give this case the utmost importance that it deserves, getting all orations of the stay under a particular and actually giving it a statutory footing actually gives it a weight that it doesn't have with the three agencies at the moment. I think that's fine. Everyone's doing the best. We don't want to politicise this issue. We don't want to turn around and say, we just want to say, can we do more? So clearly there was a
failure.
But
what more could they do if it was on a statutory footing as opposed to the three reviews? What extra powers would they have?
To be honest with you, I haven't actually read the paper at the moment, and I think this is too important for me to play politics with it. But I think the idea of a statutory footing actually demonstrate that this is the state giving all of its weight to the issue, actually bringing every oration of the state under the investigation and making sure that Daniel is given the full authority and weight of the state is something that's going to be really important.
Tanya, would you support a statutory investigation into this as opposed to the reviews that are currently taking place?
Well, one of the things I suppose I have with statutory reviews, because you know we're one of the organisations that call for an independent statutory investigation. litigation for the mother and baby homes. We did the same with the Grace case. And obviously, we were really disappointed with the outcomes of those two investigations. And so I would take the view, I'd like to see those reviews take place. Mm-hmm. And it may be that we have to do something national and statutory. But there is a bigger question about the National Review Panel because it's not on a legislative footing. Mm-hmm. You know, there is questions, there are questions being asked by opposition TDs, the Ombudsman for Children. And, you know, it's too long that it's been 2012, we had the Child Deaths Review, Geoffrey Shannon and Nora Gibbons. And that was a recommendation there would be a national statutory permanent review panel to review any interaction of a child in with state care, but also in any other services.
Greater investigative powers.
Exactly. And that hasn't happened to date. So if there's one learning from all of this is we have to put that on the statutory footing. That's mostly in the gift of the Minister for Health, to be honest. The Minister for Health would probably have to need that legislation. I think that's very important.
But it is meant to be in train.
It's in the programme for government, meant to be in train. I think they'll have to get it done within this programme for government. But the other thing I think we need to think about is also about funding and services in this particular area and those meaningful investments that can be made. Because it's the child protection and welfare services. If they're well resourced, and we know that when they have enough social workers, they do a better job.
Issues around recruitment and retention of social workers.
There is. Remember, TUSA could also, if they had extra funds from government, could invest in some of the community and voluntary organisations like Bernardo's Doors of Charity that are in local communities to support families who are really struggling in these kind of situations.
I'm going to have to come to you, Gary, and bring you a headline on the very front page of the Business Post today, choking on their own smugness. Our very own Shane Coleman is writing on the Social Democrats and the issues this week with Owen Hayes. You really had a torrid couple of months, haven't you?
So, look, nobody could have expected what happened on Monday. The information started to come true. But I'm not sure how we're choking on our own smugness. I mean, the issue happened. We dealt with it. Holly had to go on to the media our first day back, own up to exactly for what it is. It was an act that was completely unacceptable. Acknowledge the fact that Owen has apologised and then move on with the rest of our day and the rest of the work that we have to do. In terms of the smugness, and I've seen this several times in different newspapers, how exactly is that happening? So we go into the Dáil and we do oppositional politics. I mean, what are we supposed to do? Just commend the government? Give the government? How are we smug exactly? I think for most
of us... He's saying that you're virtuous social democrats who specialise in the identity politics of the left. And he said really the great sympathy that was coming for Owen Hayes this week, it came from Fianna Fáil's Cathal Crowe, not from within the party themselves, who, let's face it, did back the candidate, did confront the questions, but left him out of your thinking. You didn't really support him.
We didn't leave him out of our thinking.
I didn't see him.
You know, you may not have seen him, but that doesn't mean we left him out. Owen took the decision himself that actually, for his own sense of, I don't know, just well-being, he actually didn't want to be at the thinking that day. The next day, Owen was in the Dáil. We had a parliamentary party meeting. Everybody talked. Everyone was asking who he is. We went for dinner that evening. I don't really know how anything other than the fact that, look, this is unfortunate, but also it happens. As long as he apologised, acknowledged the fact that it was wrong, everybody just moved on, and that's how adults behave.
You think everybody moved on? You don't think this is extremely problematic for the party, particularly given the fact that we didn't see him? You say it was his own choice, but perhaps he could have been encouraged by the leadership of the party to come and join you on Tuesday at the thinking, showing that the party are happy to have him there publicly and happy to answer questions from the press.
Yeah, and well, not party leadership. I am a senior member of the party. I was on the phone to Owen on Monday. I was on the phone to Owen Tuesday. I sat beside him in the Dáil on Wednesday. Look, I can appreciate that the press will only get a snippet of what a political party or its entities are doing, but it's difficult for Owen. But he also was supported, and we've also just moved on to try focus on the issues.
Do you trust him now as a politician, not as a person, but as a politician, somebody who needs to be able to withstand scrutiny and to uphold certain standards that perhaps aren't expected of the rest of society?
So do I trust him as a person, politician. Look, I trust the fact that Owen has contributed a huge amount to our party over the 8 years that he's been in it. I trust the fact that he's a really good parliamentarian. I trust the fact that actually the majority of the population haven't got to see Owen. He's an economic analysis, passion for the economy. I think he's a very different type of social democrat. I'm really happy that he's in the party. I actually feel sorry for him in a lot of ways. He's had a big, he's had a political life that few of us could ever imagine.
Or ever wish for, I would imagine.
Ever wish for. And it's also about now just letting people see who Owen is as a parliamentarian.
I share a lot of what Gary has said about Owen. I mean, I think he made a stupid mistake when he was in college, and I think he regrets that. I think it was the wrong thing to do. I think let's move on from that. But the other story here, and I think Shane Coleman's piece adverts to it, is the Soc Dems have a perception problem in the sense that they're perceived to be this sort of virtue signaling bunch, holier than thou, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, look,
I know Gary's
a regular guy. He's not like that. But the perception among an awful lot of the electorate is that that's what they're coming from. They're touchy-feely, socially left, et cetera. That's who they are.
We are a party that came from referendums, came from the marriage equality referendum, the abortion rights referendum. That's who our membership are. We're passionate about our politics. We're not going to change that. I think people in the mainstream don't really understand us, but we're doing well.
Okay, look, we have to leave the newspaper review there for this morning. My thanks to Gary Gannon, to Larry Donnelly, and to Tanya Ward.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life, a life savings company for your journey to and through retirement.